So, welcome everybody. We have led nice high energy, but lots of stressful energy, I understand. So we're going to do our meditation anyway and just kind of try to keep the upbeatness in, but relax at the same time. We're going to be working with the Ace through Five of Swords. And once again, the Suit of Swords is connected with the element of air. And breathing is all about air. So we're going to do a breathing technique tonight. So close your eyes. Put your feet flat on the floor and rest your hands in your lap. Make a circle with your thumb and forefinger. And take a nice deep breath in. And let it out. And one more time. And tonight we're going to focus on just watching our breath. Only I'd like you to breathe, make sure that you breathe only through your nose. If you breathe through your mouth, you lose too much carbon dioxide too quickly. And that can constrict your arteries and make it more difficult for sufficient oxygen to reach the cells of your brain and your body. So breathe in through your nose. When you can exhale through your nose or your mouth, whichever is more comfortable. And now I would like you to, as you're breathing, elongate the exhalation. So breathe in at a nice, normal, comfortable rate, but when you breathe out, have the exhalation be a little bit longer than your in-breath. And we're just going to do this. I'll ring the bell, send you into a nice, relaxed state. And breathe and relax, and when you hear the bell again, it will be time to return.
follow the sound back. Let your breathing return to its normal pattern and normal pace. Become aware of your nose, your face, your neck, your torso. Feel the air in the room. And when you're ready, open your eyes. That made me a little light.
Lower down. You stop by the torso?
I'm sorry? What? I missed that.
I just feel like I have half of my body.
By the way, just out of curiosity, there's a tradition that says that that Shiva created the entire universe and will withdraw it all in the course of a single breath, and the in-breath and out-breath. Which do you think the world was created on? Do you think the world was created on an in-breath or an out-breath? That is the creation part. The creation is on one half of the breath. The destruction of the world is on the other half.
Out-breath.
Well, let's have a poll. Let's have a show of hands. How many people think the world was created on the in-breath?
The in-breath?
The in-breath. This is creation now. How many people think the world was created on the in-breath? One, two. You're not sure, Gabriel, right?
No, because why one?
One, two, three. Well, no. There is a reason why one and why both. But there, if you had to pick, which would it be? So we have four that say yay, one that says I don't know. Now, how many people say the world was created on the out-breath? One, two, three, four, five. About an even split. Well, the tradition has it that the world was created on the out-breath. I'm giving forth that the creation is done on the out-breath. Now, it's very interesting because when meditations are done often these days, in ordinary New Age type meditations, they talk about breathing in strength and breathing out, you know, negativities and stuff like that. It's exactly the opposite.
Yeah.
Well, but if we are the receptive part of creation, then we would be the opposite, huh?
That's right. We're, I suppose. But in any case, it always struck me as odd, because when you do, for example, there's a mantra, which you may have heard, Soham. It's a two-syllable mantra, and on the in-breath and the out-breath, you say one of the two syllables. And I would always, whenever there was a mantra that was two syllables, I would usually start, in my unknowingness, I would start the mantra, the first syllable of the mantra on the in-breath and the second one on the out-breath, but nay not so. And so on, of course you can only do this in mentally, you can't say anything on an out-breath, I mean on an in-breath rather. But anyway, you have to say the so part of the out-breath and the ham part on the intake. And that's much harder for me anyway. Just an interesting note, just for you to know.
Isn't it three letter or?
Soham? Om is A-O-M, yeah. It's a and we would transliterate it as being a three-part, a three-letter thing. It's not three syllables, but three letters. But in any case, just a little note. And I guess, I don't know how many of you are in the process of taking out the first five cards of swords. Anyone who isn't should do it, and that includes me. When everybody has the cards out, we are going to do a little, another little meditation of sorts with these five cards. And what I would like you to do, in order to make it easier to see and focus on the cards, is to make your space as clear as possible. Clear the clutter away from it. You know, make it as neat as you can. Now that you've got the cards in order, what I want you to do is to take, they're all face up and they're in order, take the Two of Swords and put it on top of the Ace of Swords. No, I don't mean to put it vertically above it. I mean to put it physically on top of the card.
On top.
So you make a little stack. And on top of the two, put the three. And I bet you can figure out what comes next.
Oh, boy.
The four and then the five. So you now have a little stack of cards in order from ace to five. Turn them face down and put them on the table. This little stack of cards is probably the smallest, just about the smallest ordered stack you can get. But an ordered stack, I'd like you to remember the phrase, an ordered stack of cards is a stack of cards that is a series in order where one end, where one, the bottom card in the stack is usually the lowest card, and then each of the other cards is stacked in order on top of it until you have a series starting from the lowest and ending with the highest. And then when you've got that and you turn them face down, then later you turn the cards face up one at a time. The ones that you will turn them over face up so that they come up to you in order from the beginning of the stack to the end. The lowest card comes up first, then the second card, then the third card in the stack, etc. You can make an ordered stack with any number. For example, you can make an ordered stack of majors. An ordered stack of major arcana would have the fool on the bottom and all the other cards in order on top of it, face up. And then when you turn it face down, the top card of the stack is now the fool. So when you turn them over to look at them one at a time, you're looking from the beginning to the end. That's an ordered stack. And it's just a simple way of doing it. If everybody knew what that term was, I wouldn't have to explain this every time. You just say, make an ordered stack, and that would be it, and everybody would know what to do.
You didn't do it.
No, I didn't. There's a reason for it. That's because I'm so busy talking that I haven't had a chance to do what I'm supposed to be doing. So I will do that, too. It's funny. It's good. Okay, now I've done it, too. The last and the least, and I've done it, too. talking about meditation. We do this all the time. We begin to work with a card at the beginning of class, we do what we call a close examination. We look at each card that we're going to be studying for the evening in detail. And of course, most of the time we don't look at anything in detail. We look over things very quickly. We just glance at things and just get a brief impression and think we know what we're looking at. And of course we don't. So what we're going to do is we're going to look at these cards one at a time. And we're going to do it in a different sort of way than we usually do. Usually when we do a close examination, we'll turn over a card. We'll make an ordered stack like we did, and we'll turn over a card. And we'll look at it for a minute or two and try to absorb as much of the detail of the card as we can, all the colors and lines and symbols and images and little bits and pieces of things that make up the imagery. And you have plenty of time. A minute is actually long enough to do the job. And then we turn them all over and we try to remember them and we repeat them. In this case, we're going to do something a little different. We're going to use a method of breathing that goes with examination. And this is something that is called an order, an ordered meditation, where you take a number of cards in order, and you look at them and examine them in rhythm to your breath. Different style. The kind of learning that you do is different. The way it enters your system is different than if you try to memorize. And you may not actually even remember quite as much when you get finished. But it will give you, this exercise will give you a chance to engage a part of your mind that you normally don't have. I'm going to wait for a second until Tina comes back. Meditation does not have to be either unpleasant or difficult. And even when you start off from the position where that is true, you can learn to overcome that. And also the journey work, which is not meditation, also helps you get past that. It gives you a way to do inner work without getting either nervous or frightened or unhappy. And it's under your complete control. And so you don't end up in a place you don't want to be. Anyway, what we're going to do now is a meditational approach to this close examination. So what I'm going to want you to do is I'm going to want you to turn the cards over one at a time. And the way I want you to do it is this. Just listen and don't do it yet. Take a couple of breaths, and when you reach the bottom of an out-breath, by the way, what's your name?
Teresa Gascon.
Hi, Teresa. I remember we spoke on the phone, and you had called and left a message asking how you get here, but
yes,
you got
but
here.
Yes, afterwards I left home. I signed my leave.
Good. Well, we're in the middle of stuff, so just follow along, and after a little while, you'll figure it out.
Okay.
But in any case,
it's being done.
What I want you to do, guys. Gabrielle, wait, Louisa. What I'm going to want you to do is this: take a couple of deep breaths. Yo, thank you. And when you reach the bottom of an exhalation, when you exhale and you're at the bottom of one exhale, turn over the top card. As you breathe in and out one time, absorb everything that you can of the image in one breath.
Okay,
in other words, you're going to scan the card from top to bottom in one breath, one in breath and one out breath, and remember what you can. Remember the sense of the card. Remember as much of the visual imagery of the card as you can. Don't strain it. Remember what's important to you. Remember as much of it as you can. But all you get is one breath. This is a discipline. Don't take two breaths or a breath and a half. Just one. Okay? When you have gone up a breath and down, when you've exhaled, when you come to the bottom of the next exhale, take the second card and turn it over on top of the first one. Don't hold it in your hand. Put it flat down on the table on top of the other card so you're not looking at the bottom card. You physically turn it over like that. You turn it face up. So when you get to the bottom of that next of that first breath, you turn over the second card.
You put it
on top of the first one. So let's say the first one, you turn over the ace, you look at it, you absorb it. The second breath, you turn over the second card and place it on top of the first card so you don't see the first card anymore. All you're looking at is the second card now. And in the course of that one breath, in and out, absorb everything that you can of that card. One breath only, and then repeat it until you're finished. When you get to the last card, which is the Five of Swords, okay, now you'll have them all face up in front of you. There'll be one stack of cards face up, and you will just have gone through them one breath at a time. When you get to that point, you're going to go backwards. You're going to take one breath in and out and look at that top card, which would be the Five of Swords at that point, a second time. Then you're going to turn that one face down. That will leave you with the Four of Swords face up in front of you. Once again, on the in-breath and the out-breath, absorb the four, and do that card by card until you reach the bottom card, the ace, and when you finish with the ace, turn it over and you'll be back where you started. So you'll be doing an order of cards up and then an order of cards down, one breath at a time. You'll be doing this total in 10 breaths. Okay? Begin. All right. Now, what I want you to do, we'll go around the room, and I would like each of you to say one thing that you remember about the card that we're going to be discussing. The first one we'll talk about is the ace. And what I want you to do, instead of describing a physical quality of the card, which you can, actually you can, if you want to, you can simply mention a physical aspect of the card that struck you or stood out for you. But if you do, it should be something that has some significance and caught your eye for a reason. There was something about it that struck your attention, that caught your eye and made you think, even if you don't know exactly what it is that you thought. Something that caught your attention in the card. And for each of us, even now, normally speaking, when we do this, I don't want you to repeat what anybody else said because we're trying to get the full pictorial image of the card described. But in this case, what I would like to hear is what for each of you stood out in the card, and it may be that the same thing will stand out for more than one of you, and it's okay to repeat. Okay? In fact, what I'm going to do, instead of doing an order around the table, I'm going to kind of jump around so you won't know who I'm going to ask next. Okay? Georgina, you begin with the ace. What stood out for you in the ace?
The berries, the seeds of truth from the crown.
How interesting. Good. Carol?
The cloud obscuring the arm.
Why?
It appears very, well, I've read a word heavenly to me.
Good. Gabriel?
Very interested on the hands coming out of the cloud,
mm-hmm.
taking a sword.
Mm-hmm.
Like raising the sword to the highest realm with
good
the crown, the gold on top. And it's kind of funny that the crown is like sitting on the top, but it's like floating.
There's a reason for that, but that's good. I'm glad that you that caught your good. Tina.
Hand was made into a fist, and it was holding it very tightly,
and the sword was completely straight up,
like
it
would be held
to
somewhere or
another. And even when it
pierces
the crown, like everything is so symmetrical, like
it,
right in the middle between the two.
Good. John.
Well, the object that draws my attention is the sword itself, and the directness of it, and it to me says victory, valor, and it's very strong feeling.
Good. Okay, Elizabeth?
Well, you know, I noticed something I usually don't notice about cards. For some reason, I turned it over, and I looked at it, and I said, 6 yards. I don't know why. I don't usually pay attention to the, like, I don't know, blatantly, I don't know, the yods and things that are, that, I don't know, that's what took out this time around. There are three on each side, too.
Good. Luke?
Yeah, I like the landscape under it, you know, the purple and all that. And I also like that it's two different kinds of greenery coming out of the ground.
Good for you. Deanna?
The land for me, the ace has always been a discombobulated card, because I think, because I'm a suit of swords and I identify with it. Some people look at it as a beginning of strife and others a beginning of victory. So I'm never certain, but like the land around it is gray, but the mountains out there are purple and blue, which to me means knowledge and peace.
Uh-huh.
So there's going to be some stress to go through before you get there, but you can if you do.
Good.
So that's the thing that I've been thinking about.
And Lisa?
Basically, what actually, I don't want to repeat what people said, but...
Do. It's what struck you.
Then what struck me was the, I'm sorry, what's your name again?
Tina,
what Tina was saying, what the grip, the tight grip, the direction in which the sword, you know, the way that the sword is being held, that's what's being felt.
Good. Robin?
The combination of the greenery and the crown.
Mm. Teresa, did you get a chance to look at the cards?
I got a chance to look at it, but I'm not quite relaxed.
Okay, then in that case, I'll take that into advisement and let you just listen for a while. Good. Okay, now we get to the two. Actually, you know what we'll do? Oh, did I miss you? See what happened? Okay. Lisa, I'm sorry.
I like the drops of water. And at the same time, there's...
What drops of water?
The yod.
I just wanted to know what you meant.
They're called what?
Yod. Yod is Y-O-D, and actually they're in the shape of a Hebrew letter that's called Yod.
Oh,
and so that's why they're called
that.
But
I'm glad I brought it up.
Oh,
and
good.
Then also at the same time there's a graze or something.
Coming from
the
where?
The aura. Coming at the little, around the bottom of it.
Good. Okay.
So Y-O-D?
Y-O-D is the word Yod.
And they're actually like little flames.
And it's the letter that has the equivalent. It has the equivalent of sound in Hebrew of a Y in English. Yud. Okay. We'll skip a little bit. Let's go to the four of swords. Now, just to break it up so that we don't have a systematic approach here. If we bounce around, it's likely to be a bit more spontaneous. Robin.
I guess the sort of life in the picture and the sort of reposed body.
Say it again. Don't look at it. Okay. If you don't remember, just say so. Don't look
okay.
at the card. You don't remember the four?
Well, he does now.
Okay. Okay, Joan?
I guess the position of the... It looks like a man to me, laying
uh-huh.
there with his hands in prayer. I like that.
Good. And Elizabeth?
Well, I was going to say the hands in prayer too. The thing that struck me this time around is like, I thought, that's totally not relaxed. How can a person be relaxed and doing this
mm-hmm.
at the same time while lying on his, you know? Like, it just seemed unrealistic to me. That was the time around a lot.
Last time I forgot to go. I should have been, and I didn't ask Ruth Ann either. I kind of left us out of it. So, you know, we're sitting up here, and I'm sort of, I don't know, I guess I forget that we're part of this whole thing. But Ruth Ann, what was your feeling about the four?
The thing that I was fixated on this time is in the stained glass window, there are two figures, and I kept looking at the smaller figure, trying to, quote, figure it out. And I think that this person is kneeling. I always thought that it was just a child or a small person. And then I realized tonight for the first time that the person is kneeling.
It's interesting. One can look at these things 1,000 times
yeah.
over the years, and you can look at a card and see something for the first time. How is it possible to look at the cards for 20, 30 years and see something in the card for the very first time? Amazing. Anyway, when I was looking at the four, what struck me was that here was a figure in armor. I don't know if you noticed that. But the figure is in armor, And he's lying, I'm assuming again it's a he, he's lying perfectly flat. Looks absolutely comfortable. And I don't know how many of you, if you lie on a, like, let's say you were to lie on a hard wooden table, I mean, you know, your back is curved, your knees aren't, you know, a lot of people aren't altogether comfortable lying flat on their back. I mean, there's bony shoulders and there's parts of you that, hips that don't lie straight and stuff. But here's this guy, in armor no less, which couldn't be terribly comfortable for most of us, lying there absolutely flat. And apparently perfectly at ease. And I was wondering how he could do that. Ah, here's a thought, okay.
I think he's
You know, I forget the name of what it is. There's a room, oftentimes in a castle or an abbey, that is a place where family members are buried, and they have the figure on top of the coffin and stuff. I can't remember what that's called, but anyway, like that.
The
sarcophagus, yes, but the figure on top is.
Isn't it?
I don't know. I don't know what it's called. I mean, you may be right. I don't know. But anyway, like that. Yeah, sure. Yeah, Gabriel.
For me, I look at this person and it feels like it's peaceful, but it's, somehow I don't feel like that. Because it's so rigid and it's got the pride. I like the gesture and everything, but
that's
then
what I was trying to
get. It's got the yellow light covering, right? Which is more like earth or something to me. But then it doesn't look like it's, you know, it's not part of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like it's dead or like some different realm.
I want to ask you this.
A sword nearby.
This is a really interesting point. In general, I'm just kind of a show of hands. He could either be resting or in some kind of peaceful, maybe in-between state, or he could conceivably be dead. Let's take those two possibilities. A show of hands for who thinks he looks dead?
It's going to be hard to pop those hands.
How many people think he looks alive, but in some kind of stasis or coma or meditation?
Yeah, I think it's in a trance state.
Okay. So there's a division of opinion, but it seems to be that most of you have a feeling that he's in some kind of a trance state. The interesting thing is, of course, we don't know.
Anthony's body.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Anthony's body, he's very relaxed. Anthony's body is really in a relaxed position. It could be in that pose, and your hands could be energized to that position.
Absolutely.
Yes. You could be on a flat surface, and your body could be like that, and then you feel like you're dead, but you're not dead.
That's interesting.
You could be very relaxed. Person to do that. I'm guessing that you have to meditate until you get to that stage.
Absolutely. I would think that there is something yogic in that posture. There is a posture called a corpse pose, although it's a little different than that. And it's a very relaxed state. Anyway, that's an interesting point.
That's true.
It doesn't. What I would like to do, rather than go around and ask everybody to comment on every one of the cards, any one of you who hasn't spoken yet, would you care to comment?
Yeah, the sword underneath, I don't quite understand because it looks like it's a solid, some kind of a stone or something. There seems to be a sword that you can see underneath. It reminds me of the Princess and the Pea.
Uh-huh. Yeah. How interesting.
Oh.
Yeah, Tina.
Like it looks like a man, you know, in armor, like a knight, but I always thought it might have been like a beauty in reverse.
Uh-huh. So waiting perhaps for a kiss from...
But you know, also too, everyone you had asked whether they you got back to was either dead or just sleeping, and I thought maybe it might be somewhere in between. Like maybe he always seemed to me like he was a hospital patient,
mm-hmm.
like recuperating, you know, almost dead, but not quite. And he's like trying, and he's praying to God that he'll get better really soon.
Actually, that is one portion of a standard interpretation of this card, exactly.
You know how a lot of like hospital patients, you know, like wired, and you know, depending on the accident, like, you know, just like your head's in this and your teeth up there and that, and he looks like he's laid out.
Uh-huh.
Contraction, right?
That's
you know,
a very,
all those
yeah.
beds that are not that comfortable, but you kind of have to lie straight.
That's a very appropriate interpretation. I'm not going to try and give you the interpretations of the book. This is entirely about our personal feelings And when the images which are meant to evoke responses from you, when they do evoke responses, what are they? That's all we're trying to get at here. And when we share these things, each of us takes in the observations of the others in a way that isn't altogether clear. You won't remember them. I bet 10 minutes from now you won't remember anything that anybody said, but it's in there somewhere. Okay, Luke.
What struck me is that the three swords on the right are gray, but the sword at the bottom is gold.
Mm-hmm. Why is that?
Yeah.
Interesting question.
I know. I don't know why.
How old are you?
Let me point it.
What grade are you in? Right.
It's just, I hate it when
that
happens. It's just the
There you go.
And also, the sword underneath means that he went through pain, and he's still lying on it.
Mm-hmm.
And the three hanging right above him is kind of menacing, though, because it could drop, which means at any minute he could go into remission and get worse.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And that's why he's praying.
Deanna?
When I first started coming around and getting some of the cards, every single one of the two swords scared me. I mean, if it would pop up in this spread that I was seeing for myself, I was like, now what? But in the past few months, I've been through every aspect of the sword. And I've concentrated on every aspect of the sword. And I remember looking at the Four of Swords, and that used to scare me, because to me that meant depression, because I'm an Aquarian, and for me to lie still for more than a second, it was just unheard of. And but now I'm able to do that, especially on my back. I've got to be leaping off the ceiling to be happy. And I think that at this point, every time I see this card, it gives me a tremendous sense of peace, because the three swords that are on top, to me, means surrender, I'm finished. Let it go, because I still have that, what Georgina said, the reservoir,
No swords hanging over your head, ready to drop?
No, I'm not afraid anymore.
Okay, but the interesting thing is, there are two views of this. You can look at those three swords and see one thing, and she can look at the three swords and see something else, and each of us can look and see something else. What I want everybody to do is to be aware of how many ways there are to feel, not just to think, not just to interpret, but how many ways there are to react and to feel about the things that you're looking at.
You mean they're in the air, they're not there. They're my thoughts.
Good.
Rethinking my strife, rethinking of what transpires.
Good. Let's see, we didn't do the three. The three is a hard one because it's very simple. Teresa, do you remember what the Three of Swords looked like? The one with the heart and the swords going through it?
The three swords went into the heart.
Yeah, what stood out for you in that card?
Well, what stood out for me was the three swords. To me, the sword is defense, strength, and it could have wisdom.
So in other words, the three swords represented three qualities of some kind associated with swords. Good. Louisa?
The only card in the whole deck I have a problem with, I look at it and I just immediately have to force myself not to cry. Automatically.
Huh.
I don't know what it is. I looked at it.
It's interesting because the three of swords is connected with tears.
Oh, okay.
So it's no surprise.
I can't look at it too long.
Carol?
I see suffering from this card.
What do you see?
Suffering.
Ah, that's interesting. What kind of suffering do you know?
I don't know, just like something that's in your past that's not going to be able to be avoided. It's just something that everyone will have to go through.
Okay. Joan?
Heartache, heartbreak, and the size of the heart is huge.
So this is an emotional pain as far as you're concerned.
Georgina? I remember in my very first class here, and I got a reading done, and the Three of Swords came up, and you know, everybody was discussing the three stories, but you guys came up with an interesting point of maybe it's about minds coming together, because the pseudo-storage has to do with mental activity too, not the strike of misfortune. So maybe it's just three ideas coming together to form something, to solidify something, but the middle sword is chipped, so mm-hmm. there is some pain attributed to that card.
Okay, good. So, and from a certain point of view, you're looking at the possibility that those three swords kind of come together in the heart. There's some kind of reconciliation involved.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Luke?
There's a cloud behind it.
I am so tempted to tell you what the answers to these things are. As though we were doing a little quiz, you know, we have little check marks that we could put, you know, the clouds behind are, and then there are four choices and you can check them off. No, I won't do that though.
Will we get the answer from
that? What happens is, well, two things. Number one, the answers in quotes to what the meanings of the symbols are in the tradition is in the correspondence course. It's all laid out, because that's one of the things that the correspondence course tends to do, is to talk about the visual imagery in the cards and what the tradition says about it. And I take from a number of traditions, actually, and I syncretize, so you will find that what you see there actually works really, really well with the weight deck system. However, it's very complex, it's very systematic, it's very swords, that system. And what I'm getting at here is a mixing of things. What I want you guys to do here is to find an access to the meanings of the cards, sometimes by no other means than simply asking a question. You look at the thing and it strikes you. And all you get from it is the question. You don't have an answer. But in an odd sort of way, the question itself is an answer. There's something that lights up. There's an infusion of energy. Something glows in the card. And that glow, by itself, is instructive. And it doesn't matter what 5,000 dead Englishmen said about it 100 years ago, from a certain point of view. Part of what goes on with the card is that it's very immediate, and also part of the thing is that there is a connection between the past and the present, and the connection is actually in the images. The images are pictures of what those guys thought and did. When you look at them, you should be thinking along the same lines, because those pictures are meant to evoke pretty much the same feelings from each person who looks at them. The difference is that we're different people. And the card will be used differently by you than it would by me, and so from a certain point of view, it isn't necessary that you know what those guys said about it 100 years ago. Much, much more to the point to know what it does for you now. When you ask the question and you don't have an answer, there is a method. We're coming to 7:15, so we're getting close to the end, and we haven't covered all the cards. You can see where we're going with this. We've looked at the ace, we've looked at the four, we're now looking at the three. What we're going to do is very briefly look at the five and the two, because I want to try something with you before this period ends. So, let's do the we haven't covered the three by any means, but we've just given a little taste of it. Robin, what's your feeling about the five? The five is a toughie. What catches?
Okay, what came out was somebody sort of picking up the swords and the other people and their back to the viewer, and they're so far away.
So their backs are towards you and they're far away. What is it about the far away that catches you there?
Well, it seems as if they there's a sadness to it.
Ah. I was wondering if that would come out. The far away, especially with the back turned in this situation, there is something sad about it. Gabriel, what came up for you?
I look at the smile of the guy that has two swords. One is pointing down and one is pointing up. And then the guy at the end, that is like sort of like defeat and despair somehow.
Uh-huh.
That really bothered me.
What about the guy in the middle?
Didn't feel anything.
Okay. Ruthann, what was your feeling about the five?
I was just mostly struck by the clouds.
Uh-huh.
The pointiness of the clouds and the sharpness of the clouds. They're not fluffy, soft clouds at all. They're very defined.
I'm going to give you one little tidbit of traditional information about that, just to give you a sense of how something like that could catch your eye, how simple the answer is. this particular card, the astrological attribution of the Five of Swords, is Venus and Aquarius. So when you, what you have is a combination of a planet and a sign. And so what you have is, I mean, you have the jagged clouds, the parallel jagged clouds give you the Aquarius. There's a reference to Aquarius. And the clouds themselves, the clouds, the, you know, the actual clouds, the air, the wind-blown quality of them, is a reference to swords. Just the element of sword, which is connected with the element with the suit of, with the element of air, the suit of swords, which is connected with the element of air. So what you've got is this element of air in the sign of Aquarius, and just the jagged lines, and nothing but parallel. You know how Aquarius is the wavy lines, the parallel wavy lines.
Oh.
But the swords are those cloud edges are jagged and parallel. The bottom and the top edges of the clouds are more or less jagged and parallel, and they're just a quick mnemonic reference to that quality of Aquarius in the card. Isn't it simple?
And what about the Venus?
The Venus part is reflected in the colors of the person's the person in the foreground. The colors red and green.
Okay.
The flashing red and green are oftentimes associated with Venus. But that's the last little bit I'm going to give you on that. Yeah, Diana.
We're looking at now.
Well, this card used to kind of frighten me, and I could not understand it. Until I kind of took a really good look at it, because this guy is standing there with three swords. He's got two of them, two people gave up.
Mm-hmm.
Almost like a vicious cycle.
Ah, the chair fell apart. Hold on one second. Okay. We're still dealing with the Five, and the Five of Swords is one of the more enigmatic cards in the deck, and has lots and lots of people on edge about it. It makes a lot of people nervous. Carol, what's your feeling about it?
I don't really know the card, but it makes me very uncomfortable that the person in the foreground appears to be trying to get all the swords for himself, the other two in the background are obviously suffering in some way, and the smirk on the face of the first person just blows me away.
Uh-huh. So the expression on the face and the sense of gloating, perhaps.
And trying to have everything for himself.
Ah, okay.
I feel like he's cleaning up after the fight is done.
Aha! Uh-huh. Why is he smiling?
Huh?
Why is he smiling?
It's over.
Most people don't smile when they have to clean up.
Huh?
That's an interesting question.
Breaking
okay.
it in.
Uh-huh, breaking it in. Okay, good. Wait, guys, don't fall apart here. Tina?
So one thing that struck me as very unique about this card relative to the other sword card is that it's not unusual, you know, for a sword card to perhaps be indicative of pain.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing about this one versus all the other pain cards is that in the other ones there's leeway for compassion or even you just see the pain. But with the guy smirking and gloating, it's as if this one he's feasting. There's, you know, off of the pain, like picking up the swords,
mm-hmm.
right? It's like the swords falling are maybe all that the other two had to suffer and took in, and he's like a vulture, you know, picking
uh-huh.
up. And like this, you know, the Latin,
mm-hmm.
I don't know the Latin phrase, but like your death is my life.
Uh-huh.
I think of that when I see this.
Uh-huh.
It's like, you know,
that's interesting.
And that smirk, honestly,
mm-hmm.
is not a positive smirk.
Let me
it's
give
not
you
a nice sentence. No one could tell me if I would believe it.
Let me give you one more piece of interesting information about this card, just to be aware of. The number five is important in tarot. All the numbers are, but when you're looking at the fives, it's oftentimes more clear than when you're looking at some of the other numbers. The fives in tarot are trouble. Stormy energy, usually conflicting, usually difficult, usually not comfortable. Think of the Five of Wands, for those of you who know the deck. Think of the Five of Pentacles. All the fives are uncomfortable energies. And the reason is because five is associated with the fifth Sephira on the Tree of Life, which is Devura, which is the most difficult, painful energy on the tree. It's the place where